You are tuned in to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
My West Virginia Senator Manchin and Capito's dirty deal that's been attached to the debt ceiling limit is not only an affront and assault to the folks in West Virginia, Virginia, and North Carolina who've been fighting the Mountain Valley Pipeline for 8 long years.
As the House prepares to vote on a deal to suspend the debt ceiling, we'll look at growing outrage over the Biden administration's decision to fast-track the Mountain Valley Pipeline as part of the debt deal. We'll speak to a West Virginia farmer who spent years fighting the $6.6 billion pipeline. Then we look at a major Supreme Court ruling weakening the Clean Water Act.
Court's decision today aims to take our country backwards. It will jeopardize the sources of clean drinking water for farmers, businesses, and millions of Americans.
Then to Turkey, where President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has won another 5 years in office, extending his rule to a third decade. Plus, Uganda's president has signed one of the most draconian anti-LGBTQ laws in the world. It makes same-sex relationships punishable by life imprisonment and, in some cases, the death penalty. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Lawmakers in the U.S. House are voting today on a bill to suspend the debt limit until January 2025 as Congress races against the clock to avert a potentially disastrous default on June 5th. On Tuesday, at least 20 far-right Republicans rejected Kevin McCarthy's debt ceiling deal with President Biden. Members of the House Freedom Caucus are threatening to trigger a vote to remove McCarthy as House Speaker if the bill passes. Some progressives have also indicated they'll vote down the deal over its work requirements for social programs and so-called oil and gas permitting reforms. Lawmakers on the House Rules Committee narrowly voted to bring the bill to the floor Tuesday evening after exchanging cross-party jabs. This is Pennsylvania Democrat Mary Gay Scanlon, who voted against the bill.
Here we are today, forced to address a manufactured debt ceiling crisis that has rattled global economic markets because right-wing members of the House have a stranglehold on House majority and its leadership. Republicans in the House, influenced by their most extreme members, decided to hold our country's economy hostage in order to take food out of the mouths of hungry Americans.
Here in New York, climate protesters rallied near the Brooklyn home of Senator Chuck Schumer to demand the final debt ceiling deal not include any concessions on the climate crisis. This is Batamia Coronel of the Center for Popular Democracy.
The deal that Senator Schumer and other Democratic leaders are cutting with Joe Manchin and the Republican Party, well, it just proves to us that they don't give a about people. They don't give a about people. The debt ceiling will fast-track the Mountain Valley Pipeline, poisoning every poor community along its path and dumping millions of pounds of carbon, accelerating the crisis.
Activists noted Senator Schumer received over $280,000 in donations this election cycle from NextEra Energy, a major stakeholder in the Mountain Valley Pipeline, which is also a top donor to Senator Joe Manchin, who pushed for the deal. In Canada, authorities in Nova Scotia have declared an emergency and evacuated over 18,000 people as wildfires rage outside Halifax and amid record-breaking heat. Air quality alerts were issued in parts of New Jersey and Pennsylvania. Asia's heat wave also continues to smash records, with Shanghai reaching its highest May temperature in over a century at 97 degrees Fahrenheit. In India, the thermostat hit 113 degrees Fahrenheit in recent weeks, as many laborers and poor workers have no choice but to keep working outside in the extreme heat. Meanwhile, the European Union said this week it's doubling its aerial firefighting fleet to tackle worsening summer forest fires due to the climate crisis.
Disasters are occurring with increased frequency and intensity. In recent years, we have seen wildfires raging in countries in the central and even northern Europe. And we have seen historic floods just now in Italy or 2 years ago in Germany and Belgium. This is why we are scaling up our response capacity across the mechanism, including our ability to tackle wildfires.
Hundreds of artificial intelligence experts, as well as tech executive scholars and others, are warning AI poses an existential threat to humanity. The ominous one-line statement reads, quote, "Mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside other societal-scale risks such as pandemics and nuclear war." Among the signatories is Geoffrey Hinton, who's been dubbed the godfather of artificial intelligence. He recently quit Google so he could warn of the dangers of the technology he helped build. Experts say the greatest dangers may come with the development of artificial general intelligence, or AGI, in which machines would have cognitive abilities akin or superior to human beings, and that it could happen sooner than previously thought. Many have called for a pause on introducing new AI technology until strong government regulations are put in place. Meanwhile, fears are growing around AI's threat to the workforce. Starting tomorrow, June 1st, hotline operators at the National Eating Disorders Association will be replaced by a wellness chatbot named Tessa. Workers say executives at the organization moved to fire them and replace them with AI in retaliation for union organizing. The Sudanese army has suspended its participation in ceasefire talks as a shaky truce with the paramilitary rapid support forces set to expire Monday has been punctured by ongoing fighting in and around the capital, Khartoum. The talks in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, aim to protect and bring much-needed humanitarian aid to the civilian population of Sudan. The war has forcibly displaced 1.4 million people in the past 6 weeks, while the UN says some 25 million people, over half the population, need assistance. NATO's announced it'll deploy another 700 troops to northern Kosovo after at least 52 protesters and 30 NATO peacekeeping troops were injured during protests Monday. The protests were held after Kosovo sent armed forces to install ethnic Albanians to serve as mayors in four heavily Serbian areas where ethnic Serbs had boycotted a recent election. On Tuesday, Serbia's president, Aleksandar Vučić, blamed the hostilities on Kosovo, which Serbia does not recognize as an independent country. A UN special rapporteur warns international support for more than 1 million Rohingya refugees living in Bangladeshi camps is grossly insufficient. According to the UN, about $876 million is needed to support Rohingya refugees for a year, but only 17% of that has been pledged to date. The World Food Program has been forced to make additional cuts due to funding shortages, dramatically scaling back its food assistance efforts for Rohingya refugees. Humanitarian aid groups are accusing Malta of violating international law after facilitating the forced return of hundreds of asylum seekers to Libya, where they were then imprisoned under horrific conditions. The group of some 500 migrants, including dozens of children and pregnant people, were on a boat to Europe when their ship went adrift last week, leaving them stranded in the Mediterranean as the boat started filling up with water. The asylum seekers called a humanitarian hotline for help. Maltese authorities responsible for search and rescue missions in the region never arrived. The group was instead captured at sea by what's believed to be a Libyan militia group and taken to a prison in Benghazi. Human rights groups have long denounced the torture, forced disappearances, and other dangers faced by asylum seekers in Libya, which UN experts say amount to crimes against humanity. In Yemen, the United Nations has begun an operation to salvage over 1 million barrels of oil from a decaying tanker anchored in the Red Sea. It comes after years of delay and mounting warnings of a potentially catastrophic oil spill off the Yemeni coast after maintenance on the Safar tanker was suspended in 2015 due to the U.S.-backed Saudi-led war in Yemen. In Brazil, indigenous groups took to the streets across Brazil Tuesday, protesting a proposed law that would limit their ability to obtain protected status for their ancestral lands by excluding indigenous communities that were expelled before October 1988, when Brazil's current constitution was adopted. Brazil's lower house fast-tracked the legislation after growing pressure from powerful agricultural groups. In Sao Paulo, police fired tear gas at demonstrators.
We are in a national protest with the original peoples of this territory. Today, in the name of Brazil, we are fighting for life. Here are my people, the Guarani people, fighting, saying no to the law of death, saying no to the law of destruction, saying no to the time frame.
In April, Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva recognized six ancestral lands, with the largest two in the Amazon, fulfilling a campaign promise to protect the rainforest from commercial exploitation and indigenous sovereignty. A federal appeals court has ruled members of the Sackler family, the billionaire owners of OxyContin maker Purdue Pharma, can receive complete immunity from all current and future civil litigation related to their role in creating and fueling the opioid epidemic. The legal shield could lead to a settlement in the range of $6 billion for thousands of plaintiffs, including states, local governments and tribes. Tuesday's ruling reverses a 2021 court decision that did not protect Sackler family members from liability as part of the Purdue Pharma's bankruptcy declaration. The case can still be appealed to the Supreme Court. Opioid overdoses have killed over 500,000 people in the United States over the past 20 years, according to the CDC, including prescription and illicit drugs. In New York, a prisoner at Rikers Island died last week after becoming sick. 31-year-old Joshua Valles was being held at the psychiatric unit. He was transferred to a hospital after complaining of a headache and vomiting. He died a week later. He's the third death at Rikers this year. 2022 was the deadliest year at the jail complex in almost a decade. A recent report by a federal monitor warned prisoners at Rikers are at imminent risk of harm and renewed calls for a federal takeover of New York City jails. Disgraced Theranos founder Elizabeth Holmes reported to a Texas prison Tuesday to begin her 11-year sentence after she was convicted of defrauding investors in her blood testing company. Holmes was declared the world's youngest self-made woman billionaire by Forbes in 2014 after securing hefty investments by falsely claiming Theranos machines could run a wide range of diagnostic tests from just a few drops of blood. Holmes has appealed her case but will remain in prison during legal proceedings. And in Pittsburgh, the federal death penalty trial of the gunman accused of killing 11 Jewish worshipers at the Tree of Life Synagogue in 2018 is underway. On Tuesday, jurors listened to a 911 audio recording that contained the last words of 84-year-old Bernice Simon, one of the massacre's victims. Simon told the dispatcher, "I'm scared to death," over background audio of screams and gunshots. Robert Bowers has pleaded not guilty to 63 charges, including hate crimes. Investigators say Bowers posted anti-Semitic comments and racist memes online in the months ahead of the shooting and called immigrants invaders. If convicted, Bowers could face execution. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, we begin today's show looking at how the proposed bipartisan debt limit deal the House is voting on today could cut funds for the Environmental Protection Agency and speed completion of the controversial $6.6 billion Mountain Valley Pipeline in Virginia and West Virginia. Over 750 frontline communities and environmental justice groups oppose the pipeline. This comes as protests in several cities demanded lawmakers vote down what they are calling the dirty debt ceiling deal. If built, the proposed MVP, that's Mountain Valley Pipeline, will carry 2 billion cubic feet of fracked gas across more than 1,000 streams and wetlands of Appalachia. It has long been pushed by powerful West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, the biggest recipient of fossil fuel money in Congress. Meanwhile, the entire Virginia Democratic delegation in the House has submitted an amendment to strip the Mountain Valley Pipeline provision from the debt ceiling bill, calling it a free pass for the pipeline that sidesteps our nation's environmental laws and judicial review processes. Virginia Senator Tim Kaine says he'll introduce an identical amendment in the Senate. Well, for more, we're joined in Washington, D.C. by a West Virginian who lives in the path of this massive pipeline. Maury Johnson is a southern West Virginia landowner whose organic farm has already been impacted by the Mountain Valley Pipeline. He's a member of Preserve Monroe, as well as the Power Coalition, that is, Protect Our Water, Heritage, and Rights Coalition. Both groups have been opposing MVP. His new essay for Common Dreams is headlined, It's Time to Kill the Dirty Deal Once and for All. Maury Johnson, welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Why are you so concerned about the passage of the debt deal, the lifting the debt ceiling, including final approval of the Mountain Valley Pipeline?
Thank you. Good morning, Amy. Thanks for having me. So this debt ceiling deal has a lot of things in it that should be nowhere near a debt ceiling deal. Especially the student loan thing is really bad. My son's a recipient of student loans, and it's just a crushing thing. But as far as the permitting and the Mountain Valley Pipe exclusion from law, we have been telling the people permitting this and the people building this for 8 years that they can't build this pipeline and follow the law. And it's been proven in court numerous times. So they just want to circumvent the law. I'm what a sacrifice looks like. If this deal goes through, this dirty deal of Joe Manchin's pet project, Mountain Valley Pipeline, everybody in America needs to look in the mirror and say, I can be sacrificed also.
And, Maury, could you, for those people who are not familiar with this 303-mile proposed pipeline, how directly would it affect not only Monroe County, but the entire path of the pipeline? What are your major concerns about it?
Well, we have documented many things all along the pipeline path, from the very beginning in northern West Virginia and Mobley, across some very steep slopes, so the steepest that's probably ever been crossed in Appalachia, in slope-prone soils that's in central West Virginia and southern West Virginia and even in the southwest Virginia. We're in an earthquake zone, one of the most active earthquake zones in the east, and we have actually had some minor earthquakes during the construction of this pipeline. We know that the methane that leaks all along the pipeline is harmful to the climate. It's already impacted a lot of people's water, including my own. I actually have not been able to use my water since 2021. I started having a pretty severe problem because I'm in karst, and that's for people, that's caves and sinkholes. Now, they'll say, well, you got to prove that, and they have an army of attorneys. So I suspect, very strongly suspect, that this damage was done once they blasted near my house. There's just so many problems with this pipeline. The eminent domain issues, where they just can take whatever they want, they've never really proven that it's for the use of the people in this country. Former Commissioner Cheryl LaFleur in 2017 said she'd only seen where a small portion of this was actually being used. They use something called a precedent agreement where the pipeline company, the people building the pipeline, can sell the capacity on the pipeline to themselves, an affiliate to themselves. And that's all that FERC has said is needed. One other thing. The day before Earth Day, President Biden issued an executive order saying that environmental justice for all is the priority of his administration. He cannot say that and permit things like the Willow Project, the more LNG projects in the Gulf Coast, and more pipelines across Appalachia.
Now, I wanted to ask you, a spokesperson for Mountain Valley Pipeline, Natalie Cox, told the Mountain State Spotlight, and I'm quoting her there, the Mountain Valley Project, along with all submitted plans and processes have undergone rigorous review and evaluation for more years, and in many cases has been subject to a level of scrutiny that is unprecedented for a project of this nature. How do you respond to her comments?
It has received lots of scrutiny, and the courts has struck down their permits because they cannot follow the law. I don't know how many different agencies, West Virginia, Virginia, federal agencies have tried to change the law, weaken the law, to permit this project. Permitting should not, for any project, should not be weakened and fast-tracked. if they had followed the law and followed our Bedrock Environmental and Endangered Species Act, this project may not have ever been started to begin with, or it would have drastically been changed. So, yes, and even the Fourth Circuit, the D.C. Circuit, just last Friday, questioned FERC on why did you issue a two-year extension back in 2020 without doing a supplemental environmental impact statement. This project has been very poorly designed from the very beginning, and we have told them so many, many, many times, and all they do is pay more legislators. If this project is added to this debt ceiling, then that just will violate constitutional law. It will end democracy for citizens being able to say, this is wrong, you can't do this. All that corporations would have to do is throw a bunch of money to politicians. The corporations get rich, the politicians get rich, and the people and the citizens of the country are sacrificed.
I wanted to go to a comment of Crystal Cavalier-Keck. We spoke to her last year. She's chair of the NAACP Environmental Justice Committee and a member of the Okanichi Band of Sapani Nation, talking about how the MVP threatens sacred burial grounds.
So the map, it starts in West Virginia, and it goes through the mountaintops. And on these mountaintops are our sacred burial grounds of our Monacan, Saponi, and Okanichi nations. And, you know, the MVP, they call these burial mounds rock piles, and they often say these do not exist, which often makes us—they're trying to extinct us or genocide us again. But it's going through these very sacred mountains, going through waters, boring under rivers, and these sacred waters of, like, the Roanoke, the Dan, and the Haw River, which is very sacred to my tribe and my community.
As we wrap up, can you comment, Maury, on what Cavalier-Keck is saying, and also the very stringent rules that are being set forth in this deal that would really take power away from the courts, where environmentalists have been having a series of victories against the MVP, and demand that it be approved within, what, 21 days of signing?
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Native American artifacts and burial grounds. I've been told, I haven't actually gotten to see it, but I've been told that in Lewis County, West Virginia, MVP destroyed Native American artifacts that were 15,000 years old. I know that in numerous areas, they found lots of Native American artifacts in Summers County on a place called Akini's Knob. I know that on Peters Mountain, I can see Peters Mountain from my house, where the Appalachian Trail will be impacted, not only there, but along this pipeline for over 100 miles, unprecedented impacts. On Peters Mountain on the Virginia side, I have and other people have photoed an area of significant Native American artifacts. And they just want to blast through it. They're not going to do it. They won't have to do any kind of a study or looking for it. It's happened in Bent Mountain, Virginia. And then if the MVP is completed and they do the MVP Southgate that goes through Crystal's area, there's lots and lots of Native American artifacts and areas in southern Virginia and northern North Carolina. So this pipeline, this bill says that the federal government and the state government has to issue permits within 21 days. Whether they can meet the actual rules or not, it doesn't matter. And you can't take it to court. There's the unconstitutional part of it. Citizens' rights to redress their grievances before the court is part of the Constitution. And they're taking the power from the citizens and from the courts. If they can do that to us and people in Appalachia, they can do it to anyone.
Maury,
they also said that... Yes.
We just have to wrap up. We have 15 more seconds.
Okay. Well, they just need to get this out of this debt ceiling package, or let's just pass a clean CR and get some of this bad stuff like this permitting and the Sim Mountain Valley Pipeline and the student loan stuff. It needs to go. And thank you, Tim Kaine, and the delegates from Virginia and the others who are fighting on our behalf.
Maury Johnson, I want to thank you for being with us. Southern West Virginia organic farmer whose land has been impacted by the Mountain Valley Pipeline, member of the Preserve Monroe as well as Power Coalition, Protect Our Water Heritage and Rights Coalition. We'll link to your article.
And we have a
it's
website.
Time to kill the dirty deal once and for all. The website, Maury?
Power.org.
P-O-W-H-R.org. Next up, we look at a major Supreme Court ruling weakening the Clean Water Act. Back in 30 seconds. Bassoon and marimba, composed by Connor Chi. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We turn now to look at another environmental story. In a major decision last week, the U.S. Supreme Court sharply limited the authority of the Environmental Protection Agency to protect and preserve wetlands under the Clean Water Act. It was a 5-4 ruling. The justices wrote that the Clean Water Act only applies to wetlands with a, quote, continuous surface connection to larger bodies of water, excluding wetlands that are near other bodies of water. The ruling ends protections for about half of all the wetlands in the contiguous United States. Justice Samuel Alito wrote the majority opinion. He was joined by fellow right-wing justices John Roberts, Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, and Amy Coney Barrett. However, conservative Justice Brett Kavanaugh joined the court's three liberal justices in opposing the weakening of the Clean Water Act. Kavanaugh wrote the decision will have, quote, significant repercussions for water quality and flood control throughout the United States, unquote. The court's decision is seen as a major victory for polluters and developers. At the White House, Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre criticized the ruling.
It will jeopardize the sources of clean drinking water for farmers, businesses, and millions of Americans. Look, the Clean Water Act is the reason why America's lakes today are swimmable, why we can fish in our streams and rivers, and why safe drinking water comes out of our taps. So it was passed, as we all know, by a bipartisan majority in Congress back in 1972, and has since been used by Republican and Democratic administrations alike to protect our nation's land and water.
To talk more about the Sackett versus EPA ruling, we're joined now by Sam Sankar, the Senior Vice President for Programs at Earth Justice, which filed an amicus brief with the Supreme Court in the case on behalf of Native tribes seeking to defend existing water protections. Can you summarize what the court ruled and the effect it will have on the environment in this country, Sam?
Sure. Thank you for having me. So, to step back for a moment, the Clean Water Act is one of the most successful environmental laws that we have. Congress passed this law in 1972 because it recognized that the nation's waterways were deeply in peril. Rivers were on fire, fish were dying by the millions, and the nation recognized that we had a major problem. So cast against that backdrop, the Clean Water Act has been a major success. While there's more to be done, our nation's waterways are broadly cleaner, our water is safer to drink, and things are better, and wetlands are protected. So we're now in a situation where the Supreme Court's new ruling takes away protections from over half of the nation's 100 million acres of remaining wetlands. So the Supreme Court's ruling says that those wetlands are no longer covered by the federal protections of the Clean Water Act. And that's going to have tremendous implications for everyone. And that's because wetlands are a critical source of water for all of us, and they also serve to filter and protect and be part of the ecological fabric of our nation's waterways.
And Sam, could you be more specific about how the court determines the definition of wetlands versus what the Biden administration was saying? This whole issue of the surface connections of wetlands